On this Monday, Joe Bianca is going to join us. Speaking of fun-loving criminals. I just looked up, and there is Ed DeRosa, and it looks like they're testing the audio and the visual stuff for the draw coming up at 11 to about 11:20. They're going to put the Oaks field together. And for those that haven't looked ahead, the racing tomorrow starts at 1 o'clock, and the NYRA broadcasts, the Fox action, will interface this week, Fox Sports 2. So there'll be a lot of combination coverage of Saratoga and Churchill here this Derby week. And Joe Bianca joins us from the TDN. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be here.
Well, nice to catch back up, and missed you the last little while, mostly my fault, and probably could go chapter and verse on what's transpired since we spoke last, most notably the Tis the Law Travers story leading into heavy favoritism this week in this rescheduled, refashioned, and thoroughly bizarre Derby.
I mean, Tis the Law, could you come up with a better prep performance for the Derby, especially this late in the year, than his run in the Travers? I mean, he's always been a nice horse, and he's won a lot, and he's won by open length, so he never really gave you a chance to criticize him. The one criticism I would have had for him for this whole time is that he never run this, like, big blowout race with a big figure that made you think he was like a generational talent. And then he did that in the Travers, which was just an absolutely incredible jaw-dropping performance. Probably the second best Travers win I've seen after Arrogate. Maybe there was another one that was better, but I have to think about it. But, you know, it makes for not a super interesting Derby wagering-wise, but in terms of the story, in terms of the New York bred thing and the funny side connections again, and, you know, him going for this, you know, unofficial quadruple crown, I think, you know, you can't ask for much more in terms of a headliner.
Give us your early feel here. Obviously, we're going to line them up, and I did lay out some of the details of how the gate is going to be employed, if there are the 17 that are expected right now when they go to draw tomorrow. They would leave the first two berths open and the 20 hole open. So it doesn't feel like the usual pressure and negative assumptions about inside draw will be as much of a concern this year. But, you know, some overview, Joe, not just to the race, but also what is something of an anguished backdrop. I'm sure there's lots of players and fans that, you know, that aren't interested in hearing about it, but it's going to be part of the story leading into Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously a year unlike any other, and there's plenty that's looming over it. In terms of the gate, I don't know. I feel like it might be worse for the rail horse if there are a couple stalls out, because, you know, horses tend to, you know, break left or if there's open room there. I see that happen a lot of times with races that start on the chute. So I don't know. I think that might be more disadvantageous if you draw the rail. But yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the Derby just being run in the first place, I think, is an accomplishment considering where we were, you know, a couple months ago with the virus. It's just, there's an overarching story about every sporting event right now, not just with the virus, but with the racial unrest that's going on in the country. It's been an incredibly bizarre year. And I think we're lucky in racing to have been able to run, you know, basically through this whole thing. And, you know, there were a couple times where tracks shut down, but I think eventually, you know, legislators and governors came to their senses and realized that it didn't make sense to have, you know, horses training on the backstretch every morning and not running in the afternoon. So, you know, we've been lucky in that way, and I'm glad we're getting to run the Derby, you know, 4 months later. I think it was the right decision to not have fans. I thought it was a little bit belated to make that decision. I thought it was never going to happen, and it was kind of ridiculous, frankly, that they were less than 2 weeks before the Derby still planning to have 25,000 people in the crowd, and it was never going to work out, because this would have been the first major gathering of people that size in America since the pandemic hit. And, you know, racing has enough PR issues to deal with. We didn't need that on top of it. So thankfully they came to their senses and made the right decision. Won't be the same without the roar of the crowd and, you know, coming by the Twin Spires and all that, but, you know, it'll still be a great race. It's still the Derby. And I'm just thankful that we were able to run it.
Agreed. And when it comes to the potential next step, I don't think anybody should be assuming Tis the Law, you know, slam dunk. This race is proven over and over again, and I don't care if they run it in May or September, there's too many things at play that are honest question marks. And going into this, Joe, I suppose the Travers, you know, the dominant nature of the Travers win is particularly gilding Tis the Law's lily. Is Art Collector being completely underappreciated coming into this Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on his bandwagon for a little while now. We did a little TDN podcast, Derby Fantasy Draft, and I picked him. And he's obviously, I think talent-wise, he's probably the one that can go toe-to-toe with Tis the Law. Interestingly, I think, you know, if the race had been run in May, I think Tis the Law would probably be a fairly lukewarm favorite, probably would have been 7-2, 4-1, because, you know, if you remember, Charlatan and Nadal were still healthy and still on the Derby trail at that time. And, you know, there were a lot more prospects, I think, than have made it to this September Derby. Now, you do have a new shooter like Art Collector who wouldn't have made the Derby otherwise, so I think he might be the big X factor. I agree with you. The one thing I'd say about Art Collector is I thought he ran really hard in the Ellis Park Derby, and I thought he had to be pressed the entire way. I still won off. It's not as if he was, like, gasping for the wire at the end, but I wonder, between those two, you know, Tis the Law, I think, had a much easier prep race going into the Derby, and so I wonder about that. Art Collector also is a more speed type, and the thing I like about Tis the Law, and I'm not looking to bet a 4-5 shot in a 17 horse field in the Derby, so it's not as if, you know, I'm recommending people bet him. But the thing I would say is, you know, he kind of makes his own trip, and I think horses like that, you know, are much better bets, especially as favorites, who can, you know, stalk the pace, who can press the pace if it's too slow, who can, like, sit and make one run. I think that is his best asset, is that he doesn't appear to be trip compromised ever. And I think that's such a key thing, especially in a big field like that. Art Collector is a little bit more forward, and I think he's going to be a little bit more dependent on how fast the pace is. Now, Authentic, I think, is going to be out there gunning. You know, it's interesting that he won the Haskell, and the Bloom came off the road completely after the Haskell, after winning a $1 million race. You know, I thought obviously with that race, he looked like he was going to win by 10 at the eighth ball and ended up just winning by a head. So I think that people have, you know, reasonable doubts about him staying the 10 for a launch, especially on the lead. I mean, other than that, like, who do you really look to? And, you know, If I do bet the race within the race, I think the goal should be to get one of these closers up for third, maybe second, horse like Enforceable, horse like Finnick the Fierce. I mean, we've seen that over and over again, especially even in chalky derbies, you know, where you can get a horse like Commanding Curve up for second, and, you know, maybe Winning Impression again for Dallas Stewart could do something like that. But I think that's the only way you're going to make money within the race, because I just don't see a scenario where Tis the Law or Art Collector don't run first or second, and particularly Tis the Law. I think you're better off trying to make money underneath in the Tries and Supers.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly how a lot of people, have been thinking about this for months. I mean, it's almost one of the elements of watching these summer preps and trying to figure out who is emerging at the right time. There's no shortage of horses that have kind of bubbled to the surface, then disappeared. Two in particular. That come into this, really three, if you throw in Sol Volante as well, who seems to have been kind of, questionable here for weeks on end, made his first tour of the plant this morning with a pony, having arrived yesterday with Andy Biancone. But the two that I was going to mention, Joe, are a personal favorite in Thousand Words, who looked like he was left on the side of the highway and then got down to Del Mar and is reinvigorated, had another tremendous work over the weekend, final effort getting ready for the trip here. And then there's this mystery of King Guillermo, who was going to come into this off of a 120-day break. If this was Derby week in May and you had a horse that hadn't run since January, you would just say, okay, this is a toss. But then you watch his works and, you see him physically and you think, can I possibly use a horse like this in this setting?
I mean, it's amazing. Like, I guess that's like the variety of this Derby is, trainers have so much time to prep and plan that you have so many different routes coming into it. I mean, it felt like Tis the Law and Art Collector did not need, I mean, they definitely did not need to run in the Travers and the Ellis Park Derby, respectively, because of points. But in terms of fitness, I didn't think they needed to run in those races either. And, thankfully they showed up, especially Tis the Law. I thought that was a great moment for New York and for Saratoga. But, they didn't have to run in those races. And they're coming in off like a traditional four-week dress. And then you have a horse like King Guillermo, who had the luxury, having all the points that he needed, of taking 4 months off. And you hardly ever get that kind of variety. Usually it's like one horse is off for 4 weeks, one is off for five, maybe 6 weeks. They'd run a Turfway or something like that. But, yeah, that's really, you don't know. I, as a handicapper, I don't know how to handle something like that. It's obviously difficult in general for horses coming off of long layoffs on a day-to-day basis handicapping, but especially for a race like the Derby. I mean, he's obviously talented enough. He's obviously got the requisite physical ability. He backed up that Tampa Bay Derby, which seemed kind of fluky at first. He backed it up in the Arkansas Derby. So, I would not be surprised to see him run well on Saturday, but I don't know. It's just as a general rule, I prefer horses that have a little bit more recent form than that. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting experiment. And, maybe if it works out, we'll see someone win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and maybe one other race and then, park it for the rest of the spring next year. But yeah, he's definitely an interesting item in the race for sure.
Who else, who else intrigues you here at all, Joe, that, as the months have gone by, you sort of kept saying to yourself, I like this horse. This is a horse that, I could find myself using somewhere, building tickets later this week.
Well, I mean, I think the couple I mentioned before, like Winning Impression and Forcible and Finnick the Fierce, I think horses that are, consistently run their races and probably aren't good enough to win. I agree with you on Thousand Words. I think it's going to be interesting to see what kind of price he is. I could see him being anywhere from 7 or 8 to 1 to 14, 15 to 1. Definitely would like him at a bigger price because you're right, he was kind of at the top of the heap, early in the Derby chase. I was interested in Caracara. I was unfortunate that he scratched. I thought he was kind of the right now horse, lightly raced, up and coming, ran pretty well in the Travers for a horse that only run 3 times before. But yeah, other than that, it's hard to really latch on to somebody other than, these clunk up closers to come get third and fourth. But I think Thousand Words, I agree with you on him. He's a little interesting. He's got enough speed to stay, close enough that he doesn't need a setup. If he's double digits, if he's 12 to 1, 14 to 1, I think you could do, a lot worse than that. And, I wouldn't completely toss New York Traffic either. I think he's a pretty consistent horse. I don't know whether that trainer is going to be able to reproduce that form in Kentucky, but he's an interesting horse as well.
Before I ask you about some of the tensions that are going to be part of the backdrop here in the Ville, what's your Oaks temperature with, in a lot of ways, a very similar confrontation with two particular heavy heads in Swiss Skydiver and Gamine, and then a horse like Speech, who kind of feels like the alternate version or the alternate view if you're going to, go against the two big gals in the room.
I mean, first of all, what a great race this has the potential to be. We talk about it a lot on the podcast about how good this 3-year-old filly group is, and we do talked about it, me and you, before as well. And it's going to be even better, I think, when you get to like Breeders' Cup Distaff time, and you have some of these 3-year-old fillies. It's just marvelous. 3-year-old fillies clashing with horses like Midnight Bizu and Monomoy Girl. It's super, super exciting as a racing fan for something like that. So I think the Oaks, honestly, to me, is as interesting, if not more interesting, than the Derby. And I don't say that often. I feel like the Oaks is usually a little bit of an afterthought. But when you have horses as talented as Gamine and Swiss Skydiver, and I would even throw Speech in there as well. I mean, I thought her Ashland win was tremendous, and it seems like she's been training well since then, so I wouldn't dismiss her. Even Donna Veloce, I know this is kind of a similar situation to King Guillermo. She hasn't run in a while, but she was, when she was seen, I thought she was at the top of the class. This was before Gamine really exploded, but I thought she was, right there with the top 3-year-old fillies. So just what a tremendous race that's going to be. And there are questions about Gamine, I think, at a mile and an eighth. I wouldn't be surprised if she just pops out there and just, runs them all off their feet. But, I think her two really explosive races have come going one turn, first in the Acorn and then the Test. And, it's a different ballgame going a mile and an eighth, two turns, especially if she gets pressured on the front end. Obviously, she's going to be she's the horse to beat. I think she's probably going to be a similar price to Tis the Law, probably around 4 to 5 or so. I think Swiss Skydiver is probably a tick below her in terms of talent, but I think her Alabama was a big confidence booster in terms of her ability to go a mile and a quarter. So I think she's a formidable foe. I think Gamine is going to have the race to win or lose. And we're going to see if she's as good going a mile and an eighth, and if she's good, at Churchill Downs, and if she can ship and handle everything well. I guess it's a little easier without the crowd this year, but what a horse race that has the potential to be, and this is probably the best 3-year-old filly class I've seen. There's another one I'm not thinking of it, but yeah, I think this is one of the first years where I'm really as excited, if not more, for the Oaks than the Derby.
It's a clash of styles too, which always enhances any race. It doesn't have to be a grade one classic. When you get free running front runners and stalk and go types and mid pack pressers, of real established quality, it sets up for a hell of a confrontation.
It's fascinating, yep, for sure.
Joe, speaking of fascinating and compelling, you've got acute sensibilities when it comes to the social backdrop that has accompanied these last 5 or 6 months, and there's going to be very active protesting that are going to go on here in and around Churchill itself, and I'm curious to hear your views, given some of the meetings that have already taken place between Churchill and various entities, whether it's representing Black Lives Matters, the four protest entities that have been in Louisville the last several weeks, and the 4-day coordinated protests involving Breonna Taylor. There's going to be a story that is going to have to be told here over the next 5 days.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this is another reason that it's good that the Derby did not, that Churchill did not decide to have fans at the Derby. I think that would have made for a really explosive situation with 25,000 people trying to get in the gates and, you know, ubiquitous protests in Louisville because, you know, this, I'm at a point where, this is a point in American history where I just, things are very, very, very combustible right now, more than I've ever seen it. And, you know, it's slowly, slowly built to this point. And just to have, you know, people murdering each other in the street, it's like I've never thought I would see something like this in America. And I think the main issue, you know, not to get too deep into it, but the main issue is that the guy at the top either doesn't care or is inciting this kind of violence. And when that happens, I think you can reach a point of no return. And that's where I think we are now. And also, the other problem is that, you know, the Breonna Taylor thing could have been avoided if they had just arrested the cops that killed her. And they didn't even necessarily, you know, you go to trial, they still deserve a fair trial. They might, you know, get exonerated. Who knows what happens then? But to not even arrest the people who killed this woman in her sleep. And, you know, it happens all the time in this country. And it just, people get sick of it. People get sick of there being not even a, you know, a facsimile of justice. Like even just a mascot for justice of just throwing, you know, handcuffs on people. And they can't even do that. So I think so much of this could have been avoided if we had a system that had real police accountability for when they kill people and when they shoot people. And it doesn't exist in a vast majority of the country. And people are fed up, and they're rightfully fed up. And the problem is now we have this counterinsurgency of people like Kyle Rittenhouse who are armed to the teeth and think it's their duty to go out on the street and wave guns at people and play policeman. And it's just, it leads to an extremely combustible position. And I'm not saying anybody is a saint here. I think there has been a lot of, you know, overreaction in a lot of different areas, and there's been a need for people to take a step back and take a breath and stop being at each other's throats so much. But that's just, it's so difficult when the guy at the top either doesn't care or is actively inciting it. So that's a problem, and that's a thing that, This is a genie that has been let out of this bottle that I don't think is going to be able to be put in for a long time. And I worry. I worry about the election. I worry about this getting worse and worse as the year goes on. And, you know, it's just, I've never seen anything like it in America. And I feel like you probably haven't either. And, you know, as far as Louisville goes, I don't know, like, the specifics of the protest or what's planned or what's going to happen there, but, you know, I support the people who are, you know, gonna try to make a statement, gonna try to get justice served on the biggest day of the year in that city.
There'll be a story as well that's going to come out of Lexington, out of Frankfort, and Washington later this afternoon, and I'm sure, Joe, this will sort of has a tie into last week's writer's room that you did with Sal Sinatra, and Sal mm-hmm. talked about, you know, some of the responsibilities and some of the mechanics that racetrack management can impart. There's going to be a joint press conference this afternoon, and the details are still there's, you know, kind of murky on specifics, but essentially Mitch McConnell and basically representatives of many industry entities are going to announce a variety of actions and initiatives. Part of this is what had been thought of as the USADA bill. And anyone who's listened to the show the last, call it 18 months, as these discussions have been advanced, both with the so-called Horse Racing Integrity Act, and which was strictly involving medication, and specifically was a Trojan horse to ban Lasix. The parallel bill and the parallel initiative that NTRA and coalition of other entities have been working on. We've had this discussion with Alex Waldrop and Keith Shamblin and Alan Foreman and Dennis Drazen. The parallel bill that they were working on, we get the sense, because the information is not complete, but we get the sense that there has been the compromise between the two entities, and that that's going to be part of this announcement today. So we'll wait for this afternoon, but there's going to be and as always, you can't have Derby Week without without a Monday press dump. In this case, it's something that I think people are going to be excited about. There's rumors that there might be the assemblance of some sort of a nonprofit that might morph into a commission for the industry. This has got the backing of virtually all the important entities that you would want to come together. So other than that, I don't have details, but it does feel, Joe, like there's been some breakthrough when it comes to action and specifics and mechanics toward helping all the entities that comprise the business and the sport some better management tools.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. When you first brought up Mitch McConnell, I thought we were still talking about the protests, and I was like, Mitch McConnell's going to do something about the racial justice issues. I was like, wow. But no, I mean, this is something that we try to talk about on the show every week, and when those FBI indictments hit in early March, I was like, I was ecstatic, because I thought to myself, this has the potential to really change the industry for good and jolt it into action when it comes to busting cheaters. And it's something that racing has done a really bad job of over the years. And I thought this might be the springboard to real action and real punishment for people who are drugging horses. Because remember, this is an animal welfare issue above everything. There are a lot of other issues when it comes to drugs. I think you're cheating bettors, which is a huge thing, because that's your customer base. That's the people funding the purses. But at the end of the day, this is an animal welfare issue. And we faced an animal welfare crisis with the breakdowns at Santa Anita. This is a much quieter but much bigger animal welfare issue. And it's something that needs to be solved in order for there to be a future for the sport. So when those indictments hit in early March, I thought, okay, this is it. This is it. We're gonna finally get some action. We're gonna finally get some movement on this stuff. And then that week, coronavirus hit, and the NBA canceled their season or suspended their season, and sports started to shut down, and lockdowns started to happen. And I think justifiably, it blew that story off of the front page, but I thought that was a real blow, because I think that it allowed a lot of people who have been, at the very least, looking the other way on cheating and racing, and in some situations actively abetting it and contributing to it. It gave those people a reason to be like, okay, this is going to die down. Let's just move on. We'll find the next hot juice trainer, and then everything will be back to normal. I'm happy that at least belatedly, and I think that was the case for a while, I honestly thought that it died down and people seemed like they didn't really care that much. And I think it's like starting to gather steam again. And you mentioned the interview we did with Sal Sinatra, and I think racing needs more people like him. And I applaud any attempt to make a uniform body in racing, but there's so many varied interests that I don't know how much teeth commission with so many different powerful people who, honestly, a lot of them have been contributing to the problem for a long time, is really going to have. And I think you need more guys like Sal Sinatra who don't, they're not here for the games. Like if he thinks that you're cheating, or he can prove that you're cheating, or, you know, doing the paper training thing like Wayne Potts was allegedly doing, he's going to kick you off the ground. And I think there's, you know, it's a really good interview. I suggest anybody who's interested in cleaning up racing, go watch it. But it's, you need more guys like that. You need more guys who are trying to do the right thing by the animal. Because he talked a lot about, you know, cleaning up the claiming game and increasing the values of claimers relative to purses. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can do to improve the sport, you know, safety-wise, especially for cheaper horses. And, you know, getting rid of juicing trainers is just step one. There's a lot of other stuff we can do and need to do. So I'd hate to be cynical, you know, because I think that you're right, that there is movement towards doing the right thing on this. I just, you know, when it comes to people who have so much power in the game, and I think a lot of whom have been contributing to the problem or at least looking the other way, I got to see the specifics of it before I get too excited. But I agree with you that the ball is moving in the right direction again after, I think, a period where people were comfortable looking the other way because coronavirus had knocked this out of the news. And if, you know, more indictments come too, I think that'll help, you know, push anybody who was on the sidelines to get involved and to try to clean up the sport.
No, well said. And we, you know, we may not get all the details today, but this is certainly once the oak straw is over, and that card for Friday is drawn, I can expect that there's going to be, you know, an extensive interest in. We'll look forward to the specifics, but from the dribs and drabs so far that have come out, I think some people are going to be, number one, I think they're going to be surprised, Joe. Joe Bianca is with us from TDN, and Joe and the team with Bill Finley and with a rolling cast of visitors, but also John Green and Alan Carasso and Brian DiDonardo. There's always a great active roundtable that Joe coordinates weekly. The TDN Writers Room podcast. I think people are going to be excited, Joe, and they may have to say or acknowledge that. Maybe everybody's pulling in the right direction together, and that would go a long way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think there is an appetite for it in racing, and I think there's a bigger realization now that if we don't act and clean up the game now, there's not going to be a sport going forward. And I think that's the sell, is that if you want a future for this game, even if you're benefiting from the current landscape, if you want it to have a future, we got to buckle down.
Well, and it also counts toward toward giving confidence for the players. I mean, there's other pressures that, you know, that internally about the, you know, about the structures involved in the, you know, in the wagering portion of the game that need to be addressed, and things, you know, the stewarding and so forth. I mean, there's plenty of things that vex horse players, but this topic would really go a long way. And then there's the matter of owners attracting people to the game that you know, feel like it's doing everything it can to be as pristine as possible. I mean, there's all kinds of benefit to this, and as you say, the engine on the train is, you know, looking after the horse. One issue when it comes to that has made this so difficult is that these initiatives have been so, to me, ridiculously tied to Lasix, as if that somehow was going to be a key element to you know, working out the other, you know, more nefarious and you know, problematic issues of things that are non-medication. I mean, there's medication, and then there's illicit drugs. Medication isn't a problem in the game. People may think that you know, innocuous things that, athletes, whether they're equine athletes or human athletes, need and utilize, you know, for their own care and maintenance. That's not our issue. To me, it was a real canard to keep just beating the Lasix thing into the ground.
You have no idea. You have no idea how sick I am of talking and hearing about Lasix.
Yeah.
I've had enough
time.
In 10 lifetimes. It's like, just settle it already. Like, I come down with you on the pro Lasix side. I think there are arguments against it, but I think overall it's a net benefit. And just settle it already. Just freaking settle it. And if you can't ban it, just leave it alone. They're trying to do this, like, jerry-rigged system now where it's like, okay, we won't have it in these races, and then we'll have it in these races, and then we'll have it here, and we'll have it there. It's just, it's become a total mess, and so much time has been wasted going back and forth about Lasix for decades now. And meanwhile,
yep.
There's people, like, cheating with synthesized, you know, PEDs under your noses while you're still arguing about Lasix. I'm so sick of talking about it and hearing about it.
100% agree. Joe Bianca, everybody, and you should be following Joe, Jay Bianca, TDN, and Joe, I appreciate it. I can't believe that this will be the first summer I have not seen you at Saratoga in how long? In 16 years?
It's the end of an era, probably like 15, 16 years, something
yeah.
like that. Yeah. Yeah, that's sad, but... You know, I can't believe we finally made it to Derby Week, Steve. I can't believe it. This has been the longest run-up to the Derby in history, and we'll have a great time in Louisville. And
well, and I can, having been on Preston Highway yesterday at a point, and I knowing I was going to talk to you today, I smiled about the Derby. You came to Louisville and worked the barbecue with us, and. I was
that
driving.
Was fun. I got to be in the infield the second year. That was a blast.
Well, you, I was driving you crazy because I was up at 4 a.m. doing work and typing up, the write ups, making you banging away on the keyboard.
Oh my god! I'm like printing like the Torah's length of PCs. It was that was really precious. Waking up at 5 a.m. for that every morning. But hey, it got you here. It got you here.
I guess. Joe Bianca, everybody, and Joe, really thoughtful, and one of the really emergent young turf riders around the sport. Joe, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Steve. Have fun.
Joe Bianca, everybody. Let's take a break here, actually, because I'm actually sitting. I don't think I can move at this point, but there's a vent that is blowing down on me. It's like a refrigerator in here. First thing I did was roll my sleeves down, but I may see if I can't shift off to a little less under the chill. Gonna get a chance to talk to Miguel Silva as speculated. And Miguel is going to join us. Casey, I'll send you his number. First time for him to visit the show off of Friday night's win in the Charlestown Classic with Sleepy Eyes Todd, which just alone is, just the name alone is kind of elicits a smile, you know? Miguel Silva joins us next. Top of the hour, we've got the Oaks Draw, which we'll either listen to or watch, whatever, and give you the details. Back after this, though, to Churchill Downs Derby Week underway here on Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Dick on Sirius XM Radio.
When I touch my hand and talk sweet talk, I got a knocking in my knees and a wobble in my walk. I'm trembling and I'm shaking. And when you take me in your arms to talk romance, my heart stops doing the Saint Vitus dance and I'm panting. And I'm shaking. Early in the morning time, late in the middle of the night, whenever this chill comes over me, I wanna hug it with all of my might. And I'm sweating. And I'm shaking.
Good job with little Willie John, Case. The chill comes over me. Well done. I don't know. Did you latch on to that? Was that intended? We love it. Little Willie John. You want to read a crazy story. Look him up. We're back at Churchill Downs, second half of the morning underway. We're about 15 minutes away from the draw for the Oaks. I think they're still looking at a field at 10. I don't see the... Sometimes they put up a graphic and ahead of time so you know exactly what to expect. Going to Charlestown on Friday night, I'm confident that Miguel Silva was expecting a good effort from Sleepy Eyes Todd and winning a $600,000 race. Pretty much worthwhile that trip to Charlestown, and delighted to get Miguel Silva in to visit and congratulate him. And Miguel, well done.
Thank you so much.
Miguel, you know, this horse, you could kind of tell there was quality about him. It's been a difficult year. Talk about, going to Charlestown, a three-turn mile and an eighth.
Well, since he won at Funner Park, that was our first option, coming to Charlestown. Try to do a big performance there, and everything worked out right. We got lucky that we got into the race. We don't even have a jockey at the draw. So we are pretty excited and pretty happy for how things develop.
We'll talk about the way the race unfolded, and you mentioned you didn't even have a jock, and Delgado ends up, you know, and he's got solid numbers. What kind of conversation did you have going in with him?
Well, the jockey agent helped a lot getting Delgado on the horse. The owner make the decision, and going to the race, we just told him to enjoy the ride and have a nice trip, and hopefully he can get things done. And he did beautiful. He never fought with the horse, and he put a slow pace, and things work out for everybody.
He was traveling, Miguel. He was traveling so well, and it was pretty obvious. Back on when they came around the backstretch, for the second time, somebody was going to have to really rally to run him down. I mean, when they came off the turn, he was like a slingshot finishing up.
Yeah, he's been maturing in his style of running. The day he broke his maiden, he came from way behind, dead last, to win the race just on the wire. And now he's a front runner. I think he can do it all. I don't know. I was just so excited, so happy to watch him run like that. And it's a horse that has been having bad luck, you know. He's supposed to go and run in New Mexico. They have the quarantine in Oklahoma for the herpes equine. He couldn't go. Then this whole COVID-19. I mean, it's a horse that it needs to be seen on United States as one of the best horses on the country right now.
He's a Patio Prado, and he was a $9,000 purchase going back. He is a four-year-old now. And give us a feel for the group, Thumbs Up Racing. You mentioned the owners. Talk about them as clients and what we know about him. You know, we've seen him run in some quality spots, most notably in the Oklahoma Derby last year when he was a good second chasing Owendale. But tell us about Thumbs Up and the operation and finding this horse.
Well, he's been trying to make a stable, go to the sale every year, buy a few babies. Those babies will become two-year-olds or three-year-olds or four-year-olds and start getting stronger every year. He was one of the first ones that he got. He's a great guy. His name is David Cobb. And he's working with me and with Jonathan Wong up north in California.
Hmm.
And everything looks good.
I guess so. And you know, you look at his progress and just using, you know, just using the level of competition and using the figures, he broke his maiden at Remington as a two-year-old and got a 63 buyer, then into the 80s, a couple of 90s, a 99 in that Lone Star Mile when Broberg and Hunk of Burning Love beat you ahead, and now a 102 buyer. So when you say that you know, he's really knocking on the door as one of, you know, the better older horses in the country, you've got a real leg to stand on, Miguel.
Yes, sir, we do. We're super excited. He got injured. We won him on the Derby. He got injured in Oakland Park on the trial for the Derby. We have to stop on him. He got a great race on the Derby in Oklahoma. And right now he's getting better every day. He's just a different animal.
Tremendous. He's out of a Wild Rush mare. It's actually an interesting pedigree. And you wanted to try him on the turf at Canterbury last summer. That got rained off. You tried him in the Connolly after he had won the Hawk Memorial at Remington. And, you know, with the Patio Prado in there, I mean, you can understand the interest in giving him some turf tries, but it really feels like he's just better on the dirt.
Well, you might be right. He might be better on the dirt. I don't take the turf off yet on him. I think the mistake on that race was the mile and a half more than the turf itself. But we'll see what happens in the future. He's running obviously great on the dirt. No reason why to move him on the turf right now. And just looking forward to what is coming for him.
What kinds of things are you looking at?
We are going for the last race for the You Win, You Are In Santa Anita, the Asama game, September 26th. That's going to be our next goal, and hopefully we can get it done.
I love it. Well, you know, one thing that's kind of interesting about him, he's had a different rider race after race after race. You know, Danny Cabrera has ridden him a couple of times, but Rye Eichelberry won with him at Remington. Quincy Hamilton won with him in the Gus Fahner. Adam Bachizza rode him in the Mineshaft. Eddie Martin Jr. I mean, he runs for everybody.
You know, that's one thing we were talking about, is that he cannot get the respect that he deserves, you know. To me, it was blown away when I couldn't get a jockey for him in Charlestown. And, well, you know, he is the horse that no matter who is on him, he's going to give it all.
Miguel Silva with us, and obviously, you know, a $600,000 race, that kind of opportunity, you know, you don't get all that often. And talk about your business and your training career.
Well, I started training in Arizona almost 10 years ago. We got lucky enough to win the title a couple times. Then we move we are trying to move the operation to central United States, Remington, Texas, Louisiana, Minnesota. So we're trying to get bigger and get stronger. We just need better horses, not better owners. We have a great owner, but more horses, more quality.
Well, winning races like this and getting an opportunity to, you know, to see, you know, to be seen essentially, and you know, that goes a long way. You know, and the racing, Steve Asmussen is usually doing the drum beating for us. You know, when he's on, you know, he earlier in the summer and the winter was talking about Lone Star and how great the racing, you know, was shaping up for the beginning of the season. They then had the little pause. They lose maybe a week, 10 days. But then the meet finished well. Now at Remington, and I for years have talked about, you know, what a beautiful facility it is and how good the racing is. And, you know, you seem to really have positioned yourself. And then the opportunity, as you mentioned, poaching over to New Mexico, going to, you know, up to Oaklawn during the winter. I mean, it's a good place to have a base of operation.
Yes, sir. Oklahoma is close to everything. Texas is close to everything. If you have a nice horse, you can ship it to Arkansas, to fairgrounds. I mean, we love it there. Like I said, we are just trying to get better horses, more horses, and keep working, keep trying to win races. That's what it's all about.
Who got you on the racetrack early? What was your draw to horses to start with?
Oh, this is a three-generation business. My dad, my grandfather, all my family, wow. Jockeys, trainers. I mean, we come from a long background of horsemen people.
Really nice. And the Arizona in the Southwest.
Well, I'm Mexican. My dad is from Mexico. He won over 10,000 races in Mexico.
Wow.
So, yeah, we come from Mexico, and, yeah, we moved to America now, and we are trying to get it done here.
Outstanding. Well, you know, not a bad weekend all in all for Mexican horsemen, considering Faustino Gutierrez's win yesterday at Saratoga.
Yes, sir.
He was so excited, Miguel, and you know, he's so proud of that horse that, you know, she came from Mexico City, and I mean, she really yesterday she proved she belonged. So what a great weekend for Mexican horsemen between you Friday and him on Sunday. Tremendous.
Yes, sir. We are a big colony in this business of Latino people, jockeys, trainers, but not just that. A lot of people on the backside that they are,
sure,
they don't get recognized. Grooms, walkers, and those are the ones that they do all the work, you know.
And absolutely, and you know, you've amassed over 700 wins, so. You know, your career well established, and a horse like Sleepy Eyes Todd could go a long way, Miguel, to, you know, attract some more attention. I just delighted, and our friend, our mutual friend, originally from Oklahoma, Scott Pierce. Scott.
Oh yeah, I love Scott Pierce.
The horse had not come back for the photograph, and Scott sent me your number, and he said, "You got to get Miguel."
He's a great guy. I love the guy.
Well, he and Lanny, they've had a tremendous success. They've actually moved from Oklahoma to Kentucky, and they really have established themselves as outstanding breeders. And you've clearly done a tremendous job. Before I wrap up, I got to ask you about some of the horses that are running this week at Canterbury. You got a bunch of maidens, Miguel. Tell me about some of the maidens today in the first at Canterbury. Tomorrow you've got Sir Bonbon. You've got Moonshine Moxie. These next 3 days, you're looking to break some maidens.
Yeah, I'm also a breeder. That's a business that is taking all my money. I breed a lot of horses in Minnesota, Oklahoma, and we're looking forward to break those maidens. Try to pay some bills and move forward with these horses.
I love it. Who's got the best chance out of this group these next couple of days?
I think Princesa del Sol today at Canterbury Park. They're going to take the races off the tours, and she just run a nice third when they take the races off the tours a couple of weeks ago. I think Princesa del Sol will be the one with more chance to break the maiden this weekend.
I love it. Miguel Silva, congratulations again. Sleepy Eyes Todd, Thumbs Up Racing, and we'll look for him in the awesome again. Try to punch a ticket. He's not Breeders' Cup nominated, right?
No, he's not. We need to win this race.
Nice. All right. Well, that's an evolving story then. The Patio Prado, Sleepy Eyes Todd. Miguel, thanks so much for this, and good luck going forward.
Thank you so much for the call, and I appreciate everything that you guys do, and have a wonderful day.
Thanks so much, Miguel Silva, Sleepy Eyes Todd, and a nice story in the making here. And Princesa del Sol, I do have all the Canterbury and Indiana. And speaking of racing today, since that came up with Miguel just now, let's see, hold on, there's Indy. Okay, here we go. Canterbury, Princesa del Sol with Louis Valenzuela. What the heck, where is this in the first? That's strange. Princesa del Sol. Oh, there she is. She's the three horse. She's 7-2. Valenzuela, 5-pound bug. And tomorrow, Senor Bonbon, also with Valenzuela. That's in the second. The price, 12-1. And then on Wednesday, Moonshine Moxie in the sixth. Moonshine Moxie. She's a 2-year-old filly making career debut. 15-1. Turf sprint. There you got a little bit of a hint about the Midwestern weather situation, saying that Canterbury's coming off the turf later, 5:35, first post. Indiana, I should mention, too, probably talk tomorrow to Bill Downs. There's a nice sequence at Indiana on Wednesday, including some of the seasonal Indiana-bred restricted groups, the sales stake variety, a couple of $75,000 OBA stakes going a mile for colts and geldings, and the other for fillies, and the William Henry Harrison and the Shelby County as well on Wednesday. There's stake action today, and just watching here, looking up at the video screen to there's Travis Stone. Look at Travis Stone in a suit and tie. Very sharp. Casey, let me try to send you a different link then, if you're if you're struggling on that link. The one that I sent you from the draw, that's not working. That's annoying. You know what? Let me see if I can't. Let's see if we can't get this done on right here in the room. You would think would be a little easier. KentuckyDerby.com, huh? All right. All right, there. I can see, wait, Ben Huffman wearing a wearing a mask. Here we go. I think we're good. No, this is this live or is this? Here we go. I got it. Okay, so I'll take it right here.
Assistant Racing Secretary, he's been with Churchill since 1999, and to his right is Ben Huffman, Vice President of Racing for Churchill Downs, and he's been with Churchill Downs since 1991. 9 3-year-old fillies will go postward in this Friday's Kentucky Oaks, and it's quite the field. 3 pretty powerful horses on board in this Friday's Kentucky Oaks, and it's quite the field. 3 pretty powerful horses on paper, in addition to a whole slew of horses that have up-and-coming running lines that look as though, with any sort of effort, they could jump up and join the picture as well. The way these post-draws work is we'll draw a pill and an entry sheet. Whatever that pill says for that entry sheet is how the post position will shake out. 9 to go postward. We'll give the morning line after the draw is over. You have your draw sheets. And with no
seven, she shares the devil, Florent Giroux.
Number 7, she shares the devil, Florent Giroux. This is a horse that actually broke her maiden here last year, right at Churchill Downs in her first career start, shipped out west, but then came back to the Midwest and started winning races left and right. She most recently won the Indiana Oaks, but Indiana Grand.
Broke her maiden here last year, right at her first career start, shipped out west, but then came back to the Midwest and started winning races left and right. She most recently won the Indiana Oaks up at Indiana Grand. Her trainer, Brad Cox, won the Kentucky Oaks with Monomoy Girl in 2018.
Number 5. 5
is Gamine, John Velasquez.
Number 5 is Gamine, John Velasquez. Gamine's been absolutely perfect in all 4 of her career starts. She's never been behind a horse, at least on running line. She's been in front at every call. Her trainer, Bob Baffert, has won the Kentucky Oaks 3 times. His first Oaks, though, was Silver Bullet Day 20 years ago. Gamine figures to be prominent early. Right from the outset, she's number 5.
Number 2. 2
is Tempers Rising, Julian Leperu.
Number 2. Tempers Rising with Julian Leperu. Trainer Dallas Stewart, he's won the Oaks before, and in fact, he owns the longest shot to ever win the Oaks, Lemons Forever. She was 47-1. This daughter of Byron's going to drop way out of it, come with a late run, something Dallas Stewart's done pretty well with here at Churchill Downs in big races. Number 2, Tempers Rising.
Number 4. 4
is Speech, Javier Castellano.
Number 4. Speech with Javier Castellano. This is a horse that actually raced against Gamine 3 starts ago and was actually the only horse to come that close to Gamine in her career. Speech's last win in the Ashland was really strong. 1 by 3 lengths, earned a big figure, has a developing form pattern, and is considered one of the big 3 in this race. That's number 4, Speech.
Number 6.
6, Bayerness, Rafael Bayerano.
Number 6, Bayerness. Bayerness number 6. Bayerness is trained by Cherie DeVoe, who started training in 2019. He gets her first Kentucky Oaks starter this year. Last November, on a rainy November afternoon, Bayerness actually beat Swiss Skydiver here at Churchill Downs. Has not found the winner's circle since, but shows an improving form pattern. Bayerness number 6.
Number 1. 1,
Swiss Skydiver, Tyler Gaffleone.
And speaking of Swiss Skydiver, number 1 with Tyler Gaffleone. Last time was just most impressive, winning the Alabama, going 10 furlongs. We'll cut back to 9 furlongs today. This is a filly that's already made 9 career starts. Her only loss in her recent efforts was to Art Collector, who happens to be the second favorite in tomorrow's Kentucky Derby. I should say Saturday's Kentucky Derby. That's Swiss Skydiver, number one.
Number three.
Donna Veloce, Ricardo Santana.
Number three, Donna Veloce, is going to try and win the Kentucky Oaks off a nearly six-month layoff, but in all four of her career starts, she's done just fine. She's never been worse than second, and last time out in the Santa Isabel, she actually beat Speech by more than four lengths. That's Donna Veloce, number three.
Number nine.
Dream Marie, Joe Talamo.
Number nine is Dream Marie. Can't miss her on the racetrack. A beautiful gray filly by Graydar. She's going to come from off the pace as well. Two back. She raced pretty well in the Delaware Oaks, beaten just half a length to Project Whiskey, who elected not to run in the Oaks this weekend. Dream Marie will be coming from off the pace.
And the eight.
Hopeful Growth, Manny Franco.
Number eight is Hopeful Growth with Manny Franco. Manny Franco, of course, will be the pilot on Tiz de Law in the Kentucky Derby. Hopeful Growth is conditioned by veteran trainer Anthony Margada Jr. with a real breakthrough win last time out in the Grade 3 Monmouth Oaks. Hopeful Growth has some tactical speed. An interesting entrant for this year's Kentucky Oaks. She is number eight. And with that, we have drawn the field, so we'll go through the field, and I'll provide you with the morning line odds. The TwinSpires.com morning line odds provided by Mike Battaglio. First, we'll take a brief break, discuss the post position draw, and we'll be back with the morning line odds in a moment.
We'll keep an eye on this case until Travis comes back, but here's the rundown. Swiss Skydiver, I mean, if you're looking for a reason to go against her, I don't think anybody's going to leave her off their tickets, but she does draw the rail, and that seemingly would force the hand a little bit of Tyler Gaffleone, right? Slightly. And I'm just going turn my Oaks to my Oaks PPs. And now, of course, they take the thing down the they take off the screen. Swiss Skydiver, looking at her extensive set of PP, she did draw the rail for the Santa Anita Oaks, but of course, that was a four horse field. That's the one time she's been inside on a pronounced basis. She was in the two when she got beat by Baroness, the Cherie DeVoe filly, and Cherie going to her longtime friend, Rafael Bejarano. So Bejarano, Zambito Peru, gets the call on Baroness. But Swiss Skydiver from the rail. We're waiting on Travis giving us the morning line odds, and obviously Swiss Skydiver will be your favorite. Gamine, the close second choice. We'll see if that's confirmed, but let's run it down. The two, Tempers Rising, Julian Leperoux, and Dallas Stewart. She's a mid-pack type, and we'll basically get to save ground. Let's, I think, got Travis coming back. So let's get the rundown from him with the odds. I don't know how far behind you might be, Case, from
I think we've known that for a little while. Gamine's probably going to take the majority of the money, but a lot of Swiss Skydiver fans out there. And like we said, don't be discouraged too much by the post.
All right, let's find out what Mike Battaglia thinks about the morning line as Travis Stone will reveal that for you right now. Travis?
It's Brandon and Joe.
And welcome back to the post draw for the Kentucky Oaks. As shown before, nine fillies going postward on Friday for this year's Kentucky Oaks. It is the first of 13 races. The opener is going to go at 11 o'clock. The Oaks is going to be race number 12 of 13. And as mentioned before, the purse, a nifty $1.25 million. Let's go over the morning line odds provided by Mike Battaglia. Mike, no stranger to making morning line odds for races such as this, and here they are. Number one is Swiss Skydiver, 8-5 on the morning line odds, 8-5 on number one, Swiss Skydiver. Number two, Tempers Rising with Julian Leperoux is going to be 50-1 on the morning line. That's number two, Tempers Rising, 50. Number three, Don Veloce with Ricardo Santana Jr., 15-1 on the morning line odds for number three. Number four, Speech with Javier Castellano is going to be 5-1 on the TwinSpires.com morning line odds. That's number four, Speech at 5. Number five, Gamine is the even money favorite for this year's Kentucky Oaks with jockey John Velasquez. Number five, Gamine, even money. Number six, Bayerness with Rafael Bejarano, 50-1. Number six, Bayerness at 50-1. Number seven, She Dares the Devil with Florent Giroux, 20-1. She Dares the Devil, number seven, 20-1. Number eight is Hopeful Growth with Manny Franco, 30-1. Number eight, Hopeful Growth, 30-1. And rounding out the field, number nine is Dream Marie with Joe Talamo at 50-1. 50-1 on number nine, Dream Marie. Scratch time for the Oaks is Friday at 9 o'clock. It's the 12th of 13 races, $1.25 million. You can watch it on NBC Sports Network from 3 to 6. You can listen to it on the Horse Racing Radio Network from 3 to 6. The grade one for $1.25 million. That's the field for the 146th Kentucky Oaks. Thank you, everyone, for joining us both here and virtually this morning.
There you go. And Travis,
have a great day, everybody.
Providing the details. I understand making Gamine the favorite, the power, I guess, of those figs staring at you and all the ones on the paper. But, I mean, Swiss Skydiver is hard to argue with. You know, with the list of accomplishments, that's for sure. So 8-5 on Swiss Skydiver, and the one hole, Tempers Rising, 50-1, one of three 50-1 shots in this field with obviously a top heavy group. Donna Veloce, 15-1, which was the number popped in my head. Speech, I thought it would be 6-1, 5-1 as the third choice. Then the five, Gamine Even Money, as mentioned. Six, Baroness, one of the 50-1 shots. The seven, She Dares the Devil, 20-1 with Florent Giroux for Brad Cox, made sense. And the eight, Hopeful Growth, 30-1 with Manny for Anthony Margata and Vinny Viola, St. Elias. And the nine, Baroness. Or the nine, Dream Marie, Matthew Williams, Joe Talamo, 50-1. There's Kenny McPeak on the screen, and he's talking about Swiss Skydiver, and I'm sure he'll say something about how I don't know why she's not why she's not favored. That's what I'm a little surprised that you've got, you know, here you've got this is a mile and an eighth race, and you've got a horse in Swiss Skydiver who has only been beaten by, in, you know, basically since the winter, has only been beaten by Art Collector, the second choice in the Derby. She owns a mile and a quarter win. She was second in the mile and an eighth distance already in the Bluegrass, and has got the mile and a 16th wins in the Gulfstream Oaks, the Fantasy, and the Santa Anita Oaks. I don't know what else you're supposed to do. And you know, having a filly that has real questions going a mile and an eighth, I think it'll be very close. And I'm a huge Gamine fan. I love what she's done, but I don't know. You know. Plus, let's actually, now that we've got them lined up, let's take a look and get a feel with Swiss Skydiver. The one thing that she's going to have to do, obviously, with this is leave running and establish position. The nice thing is the Tempers Rising won't, challenge her early for position. Donna Veloce goes forward and she'll be fresh. But I would think that Swiss Skydiver is just faster breaking. Then Speech, who probably goes pretty much with Swiss Skydiver. Then we get to Gamine. So you do have right away from the 1, 3, 4, 5. So the midfield gate to the rail are all four horses that are essentially interested in a similar position. Baroness, she will come more, she'll drop a little bit out of it. She dares the devil. She wants to be forward. You would think that, and Giroux, you know, he's been all year has been going forward and gaining position. He's going to stalk. You would think that if they're jostling in front of him, he tucks in right behind the speed. That gets us to Hopeful Growth. Probably sits fifth, sixth. And Dream Marie, who I saw out there today, she drops out of it. So the 2 and the 9, they'll be in the back half. Then figure Baroness, maybe Hopeful Growth, and the other five are going to find themselves more or less a kind of a phalanx into the turn. So get the sense that there's enough interest here to prompt this along. Interesting. All right, let's do this case. Let's take the break right here and give me a chance to set up the last couple of visits. All right. Oh, that must be the Oaks Trophy, right? Yeah, that's the Oaks Trophy up there on the screen. Let's take a break, probably the last of the morning, and we'll come back day one at Churchill Downs, which is absolutely flown by. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM.